And joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is Elijah Wald, who is here to talk about a really special lecture he'll be giving tonight in Griffin Hall in the auditorium, room 147. And it's called Narcocorridos, Mexico's Forbidden Songs. This is one of a number of books that you've written, Elijah. You write on lots of topics in music. You write on the blues. You've been through Louisiana. You've played some Zydeco music. You really like music.
Lived in New Orleans for a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I started out as a musician. I was a musician for about 15 years before I started writing, and then started doing music journalism, and one thing led to another.
What kinds of music did you play when you were a musician?
Blues, old stuff, you know, 1920s, 30s, blues, country, some swing, some rock and roll. I mean, I tried to make a living at it for a bunch of years, so it was kind of whatever people wanted to hear with, you know, sort of drawing the line at Neil Young.
And you traveled around a lot playing?
I traveled around a lot because I was not good enough to do well in the U.S., so I was mostly in Europe. I traveled all over India. I traveled over Africa.
What was your first book? When did you start wanting to write about the music you'd been playing?
It's actually funny. The first book that I did myself was a biography of the blues singer Josh White, but actually the first published book that my name was on was, which I actually ended up writing, was for a PBS series called The Mississippi River of Song, and took me right down through here. I distinctly remember arriving here on a scouting trip with the director and producer, and we arrived about 6 o'clock at night and pulled into Lafayette. And they said, "So what are we going to do for dinner?" And I said, "We're going to call our local expert." And they said, "We can't bother him at 6 o'clock at night to ask where to have dinner." And I said, "Yes, we can. It's Lafayette, Louisiana." And we called Barry Ensley, who I had never spoken to. And I said, "You know, where should we have dinner?" And I won't make this story too long. I'll just say the beginning of it was go down to the, I forget what, it was a church hall and have a dozen oysters, but don't have dinner there.
And so then, it was a movable feast,
then
obviously.
The thing went on. Yeah, it was perfect. It was exactly what I would have expected a local expert to present.
Did this somehow find its way into the series River of Song?
No, but it brought me back to Louisiana pretty regularly.
The food here has a way of doing that, among many other things. Well, what was River of Song about? Were you going down the Mississippi?
It was actually a beautiful idea. It was this guy who had decided to look and see whether there was still a lot of local music and regional music going on in the U.S., and his excuse was the Mississippi. And we started up with the Ojibwe at the top of the thing and ended up with the Isleños down at the mouth of the river. And what was really cool about it was that, I mean, it was only in part three that we got down to Memphis, so that it was four parts. I mean, there was all this actually really cool music from up north. I mean, and not just old-fashioned music. We did Babes in Toyland and Soul Asylum in Minneapolis, and it was a really weird, wonderful mix.
This was a PBS or?
Yeah. PBS. Yeah, it was a four-part PBS thing, and then I did a book to go with it, which is still very cheap on eBay, I think.
Well, the topic of your lecture tonight is Narcocorridos. How did that fit into your travels and your musical interests?
I mean, partly it was I love Mexico. I enjoy traveling in Mexico. But actually the big thing that happened for that one was I had been a peace observer in the Zapatista region in Mexico and had become fascinated by the fact that they were listening to this. They had this one tape that had the corrido, which corridos are like ballads. They're story songs. And it had the corrido of Subcomandante Marcos. But all the other songs on it were drug trafficking ballads, copied from hit records by Los Tigres del Norte and people like that. The Tigres del Norte are the kings of that genre. They invented the narco-corrido genre. And I was really fascinated because I had gotten into the Tigres when I actually the trip that took me through here the first time in the mid-80s, I was hitchhiking down to Mexico from Boston. And a kid in a park just told me I had to learn La Banda del Carro Rojo, the Red Car Gang, which was
but one you had
of,
to learn how to play it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was one of the first huge Narco Corrido hits. It got turned into a whole series of movies. But when I tried to read up on it, everybody basically just dismissed this as like corridos used to be this wonderful Mexican genre, but now it was just this junky movie fiction shoot 'em up junk.
And about what year are you talking about right here? For the
80s.
80s.
Mm-hmm. La Banda del Carro Rojo was from the mid-70s, but I'm now talking 80s. And then the Zapatistas, of course, were talking 94. And so I was fascinated to find that right next to the Tigres del Norte, they were singing, in fact, very legitimate corridos of the current revolution. And then the Tigres put out an album in the early 90s called Jefe de Jefes, Boss of Bosses. It was a 2-CD set of nothing but corridos that I just started listening to over and over and decided was the best document on contemporary Mexico available. I mean, they had songs about political corruption, about immigration to the United States, about the drug war, in a very nuanced and interesting way. And it just began to drive me nuts that they were doing this quality of work. They weren't writing it. No one had ever talked to the songwriters who were writing this. And no one was talking about these people as serious writers. I mean, infinitely more people know Jefe de Jefes than know the works of Carlos Fuentes. And yet, you know, there were hundreds and thousands of articles interviewing Carlos Fuentes, and no one had ever interviewed Paulino Vargas, the author of La Banda del Carro Rojo. So that was the mission. Mm-hmm. I just went to Mexico and decided to interview all those guys and say, you know, ask them, where does this come from? How do you get your ideas? How do you go about writing? And what purpose does this serve?
Well, again, for so many of us who are just hearing about this for the first time, many of our listeners, I'm sure, this group that you're mentoring.
Los Tigres del Norte.
Yes, tell us about their history.
They actually started out, they came illegally to California back in the late 60s and settled in San Jose. And, I mean, the best way to describe how popular they are is if the Rolling Stones and Willie Nelson were the same group and were still getting number one hits. That's how popular the Tigres del Norte are.
And they're popular in California and Mexico. Where would you say they're?
Throughout the United States and throughout the Spanish-speaking world. I don't know what their nearest show would be to Lafayette mm-hmm. these mm-hmm. days.
Houston.
No. I'm sure it's nearer than Houston. Mm-hmm. My guess is they're by now doing Louisiana because there are enough Mexicans. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the Tigres del Norte played in any stadium around here, every Mexican in 200 miles will come, and that will fill a pretty fair stadium by now.
So describe this music again for those of us who we have some sense of mariachi
sure.
music. We have a
sure.
sense.
I mean, the craziness of this whole thing is this music is constantly compared to gangster rap, mm-hmm. particularly now that the violence has ratcheted up in Mexico. And actually, in my talk, I'm going to be talking a bunch about that because in Los Angeles, it really, really does play as mm-hmm. an equivalent of gangster rap. I mean, the kids who buy this are buying this and hardcore gangster rap, mm-hmm. but it sounds like accordion polka. I mean, it really sounds like accordion polka. Mm-hmm. It is accordion polka and waltzes. It's, yeah. I mean, the average, the typical lineup for, I mean, the Tigres is button accordion, a sort of low-strung 12-string guitar they call the bajo sexto, electric bass, brilliantly played, drums and saxophone, which pretty much just doubles the accordion lines. And then the other big style on the West Coast is banda, which are like German umpa brass bands. And exactly like German umpa brass bands, mm-hmm. they started because the West Coast breweries in Mazatlan were owned by Germans and brought in instruments and instructors to have brewery brass bands, which has evolved into a Mexican style, and because Sinaloa is the heartland of the drug traffic, these Oompah brass bands are thought of as the hardcore drug style.
Well, I guess that's what I was interested in you describing it. Cecil and I were talking a little bit before you came. I guess my closest experience would have been in a couple episodes of Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. They had a band standing
in the
middle.
They have some norteño. Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
And
singing a narco corrido.
But it sounded like you're describing an Oompah band, and it didn't have an aggressive feel that we might associate with gangster rap, I guess.
I mean, the answer to that is musically it really doesn't, but the guys driving around in the big SUVs with the heavy bass speakers, the fact that the heavy bass speakers are picking up tuba...
gangster tuba.
Doesn't change the fact that you know who those guys are.
Right.
I mean, rap sounds scary because people find those people scary. I mean, there's nothing particularly scary about a lot of rap. It just has a heavy bass line, and actually a lot of it's pretty funny.
I want to tell people who may just be tuning in and finding this rather interesting. My guest is Elijah Wald. He is here on the UL campus to give a lecture tonight called Narco Corridos, Mexico's Forbidden Songs. And that will be at 7:30 this evening. It's free and open to everyone. So if you'd like to find out more about this incredibly popular genre of music, you should attend tonight.
And I mean, I'll be playing a lot of music and showing some videos. There's by now YouTube is the major forum now. There's a whole new movement called the Movimiento Alterado, which everybody treats like this huge modern new thing. It sounds just like the old-fashioned stuff. The difference is that the violence is more hardcore.
In the language,
and that the guys are now not dressing like Nashville Cowboys, which is how the Tigres del Norte dress. The guys are now tending to dress more like street thugs.
And that's very recent.
That's very recent. Well, it's the last 15 years, say. It actually was started by a guy named Lupio Rivera. He didn't dress like a street thug. He dressed in Italian suits because he had seen Scarface 200 times. And it occurred to him, there's no reason a Latino gangster needs to dress like a cowboy. He can dress in Italian suits.
Or a mariachi band. Well, give us a little bit of history of this. You have a really interesting, I don't know what web page it's on, but you have a series of videos that show a kind of a really nice history. And you may be addressing part of that tonight. But it actually goes back quite a ways, the origins of this.
I mean, the funny part about it is that the first huge wave of drug trafficking corridos, the drug was alcohol. I mean, it's really easy to forget that all those Mexican border towns, the reason anyone has heard of Tijuana is prohibition. Tijuana was a little backwater that no one had heard of until in the 1920s, alcohol was made illegal in the U.S., and everyone from Los Angeles had to go to Tijuana to party. And at that point, they began writing these corridos of the brave tequileros who would cross the border carrying alcohol for the gringos and shoot it out with the Texas Rangers. And there's also a political import to all that, because in Mexico, you hear this a little less often now, but you still hear it. There are a lot of people who feel that the southwestern United States was stolen from Mexico, that border shouldn't exist. And so, you know, young guys with guns on their hips, or young women, there's actually a whole lot of these songs about women, who are crossing that border in defiance of the gringo lawmen, are sort of heroes by definition.
I guess it all depends upon perspective, doesn't it? songs. Well, so back as far as the 20s, they were writing songs about this people crossing the border being very brave and heroic.
Tres Tequileros. The first time I ever heard a corrido, I was actually living in Agadir, Morocco, with a hashish smuggler from San Antonio, who was the grandson of one of the heroes of Los Tres Tequileros, and who taught me the song because he was, you know, he felt like he was carrying on the family thing.
History, honor. What does tequileros mean?
It's just from tequila. Tequileros were people who carried...
Smuggling.
Who were bootleggers. In fact, they have a corrido de los bootleggers. And the connection is absolutely exact. I mean, one of the things I'll be playing tonight from 1934, prohibition ended in 33, by 1934, you already have Corrido saying, I used to carry rum and tequila and Havana wine. Now I'm carrying heroin, morphine, and marijuana.
In the 30s, they were singing
34.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's nothing new about it. What's new about it was the Tigres in the 70s made it into this big cinematic genre. I mean, there have been 25 films based on the Tigres songs, just them. But, I mean, there are hundreds now of narco films, each with a corrido.
Well, tell us about these films. Again, these are probably films very few of us have seen.
They're junk. They're terrible.
So don't go running out to...
Yeah, no. I mean, the first huge hit was a thing. It was a song called Contrabando y Traición, Smuggling and Betrayal, that was about Camelia La Tejana, Camelia the Texan, who crosses the border with her boyfriend, and they sell the marijuana that they've had in the car tires in Los Angeles. And then he says, here's your half of the money. I'm off to San Francisco to my true love. And she blows him away. And the last line of the song is, all the police ever found was the discarded pistol of the money and Camelia. Nothing more was ever heard. And it became a huge hit, and it was made into a movie called Camelia La Tejana. And then there was Son of Camelia and The Daughter of Camelia and The Return of Camelia. And the Tigres did two more songs on it, but they were five movies. And it led into the whole Lola the Truck Driver series.
So real Mexican pulp fiction.
Oh, absolutely. No, hardcore. I mean, these were drive-in movies. Mm-hmm. Now they're direct-to-video movies. But they still are churning them out in Tijuana because now, I mean, one of the things about the drug violence having ratcheted up, and for people who aren't aware of what's going on in Mexico, the official estimate is 60,000 deaths in the last 6 years. The unofficial estimates are maybe half again as much. And that means that that's the news of the day, which also means it's the theme of the movies and the theme of the songs.
Yeah, I don't think any of us had any idea how many films were made out of the subjects of those songs.
Oh.
So they would be writing these songs and then somebody would write a screenplay and make a movie out of it.
I'm not sure anyone would write a screenplay. I mean, if you go to any Mexican flea market, I mean, I was just at one in Albuquerque. And a quarter of the offerings will be narco movies, and many of them with corridos, many of them, you know, with pictures on the front of the musical groups because the stars are unknown, but the musical groups are known.
And do they tend to be these very sentimental, romantic, albeit mixed with violence? I mean,
No. The songs tend to be, I mean, some of them are. Because, I mean, the traditional corridos, a lot of them were written for someone who had died, and they were a lament. But there's this guy named Chalino Sanchez who changed the world in the late 80s, early 90s by inventing something called the Corrido de Amistad, the friendship corrido, which instead of telling how someone died heroically at the hands of his enemies or the Texas Rangers or whoever else, just says, so-and-so is the toughest guy. He has the most beautiful girls, the biggest cars, the biggest guns. He sells not pounds but tons. And the advantage of those, of course, is since the person isn't dead, he can pay you to write the song about him.
Patronage.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, and those things are not laments. Those things are upbeat polkas. They'll be played at a dance. I mean, all of this music is dance music. Mm-hmm. All Mexican music except mariachi is dance music.
So a lot of occasional corridos about people, real people,
oh,
and
yeah,
their actions. And
oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, also news corridos. I mean, if anything important happens, there'll be a corrido. But a lot of them now, I mean, you know, if you cross the border, I haven't talked with anybody doing for hire stuff in the last few years, but when I wrote the book, which was a dozen years ago, they basically said, yeah, you know, anybody made a successful run across the border, some guy, you know, you'd buy the big belt buckle, what they called cream of silk shirt, these fake Versace shirts with marijuana leaves and the Virgin of Guadalupe on them, and ostrich skin boots and maybe some breasts for your girlfriend, and you'd hire somebody to do a corrido about your exploits. And you literally would just sit down with them and say, I'm from this town. I was born on this day.
Like hiring a medieval troubadour.
Exactly. No, that's exactly. It's court poets.
Mm-hmm. Again, I just have, if people are just tuning in, we're talking about Narcocorridos, Mexico's Forbidden Songs. That is the topic that my guest Elijah Wald will be addressing tonight in Griffin Hall Auditorium at 7:30. He's written a lot about it, obviously traveled, interviewed people. Did you ever feel in danger?
No.
Never?
No. Incidentally, you just said, you know, medieval troubadours. That's exactly what the corrido singers say. If you say, you know, where does this come from? They'll say es una herencia de los juglares medievales. It's a inheritance from the medieval minstrels. They're acutely conscious that they're carrying on this ancient Spanish tradition.
Well, and when you think of what they wrote about, death and destruction and...
Oh, yeah. No, they're right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what fascinated me about it, because I've always been, I was a folk singer when I was a kid, you know, and listening. I'm, in fact, about to be in Boston singing Woody Guthrie's Ballad of Pretty Boy Floyd.
So there was something about this genre that really touched.
So this was familiar. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. But with the difference that, you know, the first time I interviewed the Tigres del Norte and told them I was doing a book on this, their response, they were in Boston playing a concert, which you don't think of Boston as Mexican territory. It was $75 a ticket, and they were filling a 2,000-person dance hall. And I told them what I was doing. They said, oh, what are you doing Sunday? And I wasn't doing anything on Sunday. So they flew me to Mexico City, where they were doing a concert on the main plaza that, as it turned out, was the largest crowd ever assembled in the main plaza in Mexico City. It was something between 150,000 and 200,000 people. But the point was, they just flew me down there because I was doing a book about this sort of thing and I really should see it.
And no one had ever approached them about writing a book about
that. That was certainly true, but it was, I'm also just trying to say, you know, the level of sort of money and mm-hmm. power mm-hmm. involved in this music. I mean, these guys are superstars, you know, whereas Woody Guthrie, you know, everybody I'd ever loved and written about, all my favorite New Orleans musicians, you know, Lee Dorsey was working as a mechanic.
It's a different level, yeah, of popularity. Those musicians had never flown you down to Mexico to be for one concert.
I mean, it was absolutely, mm-hmm. it was really nice having been writing about folk music for years, and you're always depressed at how badly the people you love mm-hmm. have done with their music. It was really nice to go around interviewing a bunch of songwriters who had mansions and swimming pools.
Were.
Yeah.
Well, how long have they been together as a group? You said they started
the
back in the 70s.
Well, they're brothers.
Okay.
I mean, they crossed the border when Jorge, who's the oldest, was 16, I think, in 68. And one brother has left. But the rest of them are just the same guys. There's now a much younger brother. I think he's a half-brother who's been added on. But no, it's the same. They have been cohesively together now, and they've been superstars now consistently for 40 years. And I mean, they put out a song about the political corruption a year and a half ago, which was once again the number one hit in the Mexican market. I mean, they are not just an oldies group.
I just have this image out there. We cover most of South Louisiana. And I have this image of people out there going to their computers, typing in this name, looking up YouTube videos, having, again, never heard of this group or known much about the genre.
Well, all I can tell you is I don't know about Lafayette, but already in New Orleans before Katrina, and Katrina brought in, I mean, I don't remember what the percentage mm-hmm. is, but the percentage of Mexicans has gone through the roof since Katrina. But already before Katrina, they were at least two record stores carrying nothing but Mexican in New Orleans.
I guess we have an awful lot of music right around here to keep us busy, too. You know,
it's true everywhere in mm-hmm. the United States. I mean, routinely, I just gave a talk in Albuquerque in Spanish, in a Spanish class about this, 2 weeks after a narco-corrido group had filled the Civic Auditorium there. And nobody I was talking to had ever heard of the group.
In the classroom.
Or had heard the music.
Okay, so we don't feel so bad.
And I mean, this was a room entirely of Spanish-speaking Latinos in the Southwest, and they were unaware of it. It's, you know, these are the guys, you know, if you go to the guy repairing the roof and ask about the Tigres del Norte, he'll tell you.
He'll know. He's probably seen all their films, too. Some of them.
It's harder to see the films now.
Yeah.
But the Tigres are the grand old men. I mean, the Tigres are legends.
So you can find a lot of information on the web if you're searching for it, YouTube videos.
Yeah, if you want to start, I actually, my website is elijah@elijahwald.com.
All right.
And you're absolutely right. I should update it with a link to the page that
that's really
I
a lovely collection.
Because I did put together this, they called it a 10 best list, but sort of a chronological 10 high points of Narco Corrido, and I should have a link to that.
Gives you really a nice sense of the progression. If you have just tuned in or you're wondering how you can find out more about this subject, my guest Elijah Wald is here on the UL campus. He's giving a lecture tonight in Griffin Hall Auditorium, room 147. Again, the title is Narco Corridos, Mexico's Forbidden Songs, and his website is elijahwald.com. It's a good place to start there or attend the lecture, which is completely free. And I think tomorrow there's going to be a roundtable discussion at 11 o'clock, and that will be in Griffin Hall as well, I think. Let's see. Actually, it's going to be in the Gaines Center. It's going to be in the Gaines Center with Barry Anseley and ethnomusicologist Mark DeWitt, and it's called Using Music to Write
History. And John Troutman.
John Troutman will be there.
He may not be on that list, but he's a fine ethnomusicologist too.
And musician.
And actually has worked on brass band, so we're going to have some brass band to talk about. Yeah, and a great steel guitar player.
Well, good discussion. That's going to be at 11 tomorrow in the Gaines Center, which is on the third floor of Dupre Library. Just head on up there, 11 o'clock, and you can attend that roundtable discussion, or tonight, 7:30 in Griffin Hall Auditorium, room 147. All are invited, and parking is available at nighttime. Elijah, thank you so much for coming by to tell us more, and we'll look forward to the lecture this evening.
Thank you so much for having me.